Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined by Predator centerman Matt Duchene to begin the 9 o'clock hour for our weekly conversation with him. So looking forward to that. That brought to you by Two Rivers Ford and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. And then at 9:30, Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us. We'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators with him as well. So a lot still to get to here on today's show. But Joe, we had Josh Ward on from WNML in Knoxville in the last hour at 7:30, and he talked about the legacy of Philip Fulmer. And I think that's a really interesting question as we move forward here, because obviously it has not gone well for Philip Fulmer this week. He is quote unquote retiring after the debacle with Jeremy Pruitt and the investigation. Tennessee moving on from Jeremy Pruitt. Philip Fulmer will no longer serve as the athletics director when Tennessee finds his replacement. And you balance that with his coaching career at Tennessee, where obviously he is a beloved figure. Finished 151 wins, 52 losses, and one tie in a coaching career that started at the end of the 92 season as head coach and went all the way up to 2008 with a national championship in there in the 1998 season. So obviously a lot of Tennessee fans, the best football that they have ever seen came with Philip Fulmer at the helm. And that was what it was like for me growing up in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. Tennessee was a pretty good football program in this country, one of the elite football programs in this country. So trying to balance that legacy with what we've seen since then and his tenure as athletic director, how do you balance the two? And overall, what do you think Philip Fulmer's legacy will be at Tennessee when everything is said and done?
Well, look, you can't take this chapter and erase it. I mean, it happened and it wasn't great. I will always give Philip Fulmer a pass for the spot he was in when he was looking to hire someone again. So basically it's the guy who now is in charge, Kevin Steele, Pruitt, Mel Tucker. You were basically looking at very successful Power Five coordinators at the point that he hired Jeremy Pruitt. So look, part of his legacy will be that he made a bad choice, but I've always believed this with the coach turned AD. I think back to Vince Dooley. Like Vince Dooley, did Georgia fans think about Vince Dooley as the AD, or do they think about him and Herschel Walker and championship teams? I'll go back to my career at Michigan State. Ron Mason was the athletic director. He hired John L. Smith to be the head football coach. It was a bad choice, and he kind of went off on his own and made the hire, and it wasn't good. But Ron Mason, rest in peace, will always be remembered as, you know, the national championship hockey coach there. You know, I think Philip Fulmer's legacy is secure in that way. People are going to remember, think of him most, one, for just what he did as a coach. I think two, then the Johnny Majors thing, because that's just an irresistible soap opera. And this is a bad chapter tacked on to the end. I still also think you give him somewhat of a break here because he came in during a bad time and pinch hit. And I don't think anyone thought, well, Philip Fulmer is going to be the AD for the next 15 years.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, I think you look back at the coaching part of this as well. And the interesting part of Fulmer's tenure is obviously, you know, went very successfully in the mid to late 90s and into the early 2000s as well. You know, I think back to that 0-1 team and how good they were and the missed opportunity there, losing to Nick Saban that year. In the SEC title game, that team was very, very good at Tennessee. But I also think back to like the way that he's gotten some of these jobs. Like a lot of Tennessee fans and even people outside of Tennessee, it kind of rubs them the wrong way of how he got the coaching job, taking over for Johnny Majors. You mentioned earlier in the show, a lot of people view it as stabbing John Curry in the back as well to take over at the athletic director position. Like, how do you think those two instances factor into this? Because I do know there are a lot of Tennessee fans that still take issue with the way Philip Fulmer was given this job as head coach after Johnny Majors back in the early 90s.
I will say that I have, I mean, look, I find this story fascinating. You know, I actually got to know Johnny Majors a little bit many years ago, so I've heard his side multiple times. And rest in peace, Johnny. I've talked to people, I would say, very strongly on both sides of this.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, and look, anyone who says this wasn't a coup, at least at some point, maybe not a completely, I don't think it was a totally preordained or pre-planned thing. You know, Johnny Major's heart situation, all that was, you know, that was something that no one could have controlled or predicted. But at some point, yes, absolutely, it became what I think would qualify as a coup. I do think that this latest, you know, just the way it ended, one, Fulmer, his coaching career, like just about all of them do, faded, and he, you know, he was fired. And then this latest thing, there's probably more sentiment now for Majors in that argument than for Fulmer. That's just my guess, but it's a sense I get. I think it'll always be, that thing will always be talked about. I mean, I think that's one of the, in this state, is there a bigger sports soap opera than that whole thing? You know, it's hard to top that one. And then as far as you mentioned Curry, yeah, I don't know. There were definitely people who said that.
People got a whole lot less I don't of a know. Problem with that one.
Yeah, like I don't necessarily buy that. I haven't heard anything like concrete that's absolutely how it came about. I think that he was like a lot of people as that search went on, like concerned about where it was going and what John Curry was doing. So, I mean, I guess you could – so did he speak up? Does that count as stabbing? You know, I mean, look, I think that John Curry hurt himself there, and the thing with the not being able to be reached and all that, that was real. Philip Fulmer didn't do that, you know. So, but the Majors thing, yeah, I think there's probably more sentiment on the Major side now than maybe there would have been, I don't know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. When Philip Fulmer is your coach and you're winning national titles, SEC titles,
yeah,
and all that, you know, you don't want to hear about Johnny Majors anymore. Right? But now you look back at the whole thing and it's like, yeah, that probably wasn't the greatest behavior.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, Fulmer's coaching legacy and AD legacy should be separated. They were in two completely different eras and they are completely different positions. Even though he acted like a coach at times while being AD, he was a heck of a coach, but he sucked as an athletic director. And look, you know, to Josh Ward's point, I mean, there are a lot of programs athletically right now. They're doing well at Tennessee under Fulmer's time as athletics director, but he was brought in specifically to fix the football program. And now it's leaving it in a mess. And it was a mess when it started. You can make an argument. It's even more of a mess now, depending on what happens with the NCAA and all that moving forward. So, look, I mean, at the end of the day, when you look back on Fulmer's tenure as the athletics director, it's not going to be viewed favorably by Tennessee fans just based on the football program and the hiring of Jeremy Pruitt. So I hear what Nate's saying there. You got to separate the two, but that has to be part of this discussion as well. I mean, I think most people will remember Philip Fulmer for his coaching job that he did and the success that he has. I mean, heck, Joe, I mean, we even get people from time to time on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com say that they should have never fired Philip Fulmer, and that's how they got into this mess to begin with. I don't necessarily buy into that, but that sentiment is still out there that Fulmer should have been allowed to coach past the 2008 season and maybe Tennessee wouldn't be in the mess that they're in today.
Yeah, but how many people who are saying that now were saying it then? I mean, I don't think there was a lot of debate by the end there in that 2008 season, was there?
No.
The way things were going. I mean, I know that.
I mean, I was in the building when they lost to Wyoming. It was not a pretty sight.
Yeah, I mean, it's and who knows? He may have turned it around, you can make the case that for all he did he not deserve more time? But really, I mean, what was the last great team he had? 2001? I know that the year before, 2007, they got to Atlanta, but the last great team. probably 2001, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty good in 03 and 04, but 2001, that team was stacked. That was the last elite-level team that they had.
So if you trace it from there to what they were in 2008, I mean, it's not like it was just a one-year dip. It was a pretty significant trend in the wrong direction. So I'm not convinced that just keeping him there means, you know, that he 5 years after that, he still would have been there. And then who knows? I mean, hey, maybe better choices are made after that, but I think you're still in a position of you have to make choices after Philip Fulmer. What are your choices? They weren't good.
No, they were not good at all. And it's interesting, like, it was time to move on. And it's easy to sit here now and second guess everything that's happened since then, but it was not trending in the right direction with Philip Fulmer. You know, they did go 10-4 in 2007, got to the SEC title game, lost to LSU, and the next year, I mean, 5-7, they were just, quite frankly, at times abysmal that year, and the recruiting was starting to fall off a little bit, so it was time to move on. It's easy to sit here and second guess now, but I think overall, obviously, I mean, you go 151-52 as a head coach, you're going to be remembered very favorably, and the run that he put together, still the most successful run that Tennessee has ever had as a football program. And I think even when everything's said and done, and you know how awkward the press conference was the other day and just the butt kissing that was going on from Dondi Plowman and Randy Boyd on that stage in that circumstance, I thought was stupid, and I thought it was not the time for it, as Josh Ward laid out there. That's what the goal was, because they want Philip Fulmer's legacy to remain intact at Tennessee. And I think once the smoke clears from this, and it will eventually, his legacy will still be a very positive one at the University of Tennessee. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion and get your reaction. What will be Philip Fulmer's legacy at the University of Tennessee when everything is said and done? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. What do you think Philip Fulmer's legacy is at Tennessee, and how much, if at all, do you think that this affects that legacy?
I think overall, Philip Fulmer's legacy will be appreciation for what he's done for Tennessee. Obviously, as a football coach, he had tremendous success with the championships, the national title, and a bunch of wins. And for pretty much anybody that I know that has seen Tennessee football succeed, the best football they've ever seen and maybe will ever see was with Philip Fulmer as the head coach. Obviously, the athletic director tenure did not go how he wanted and how anybody at Tennessee wanted. While there were some bright spots in the athletic department, other sports are in very good shape. He was hired to fix football, and he's leaving football in a complete mess.
That was Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on with us earlier in the show discussing the legacy of Philip Fulmer at Tennessee. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Want to pass a quick programming update along very quickly. Matt Duchesne was originally scheduled to join us at 9 o'clock. He will now do so at 8:45. So looking forward to that conversation coming up in about 30 minutes with Predators centerman Matt Duchesne. So we'll have that for you at 8:45. Joe, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Daniel in Murray, Kentucky, texts in and says, how will Fulmer's legacy be compared to his predecessors over the last decade with Mike Hamilton and Dave Hart and John Curry? So talking about his legacy as an athletic director on that front.
Well, you know, so first of all, like, his legacy will be discussed a million times more than any of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because he's the legendary football coach. I mean, again, that's his legacy. As far as if you want to go legacy as AD, I mean, Philip Fulmer from day one to the last day was a stopgap hire. I don't think there's any question about that. Now, we do know he had an extension, so he was going to go a few more years here, but I think that would have been it. And he did, as he said, he's 70. He wasn't going until 80. Those other names you mentioned, I mean, those guys were here, you know, for the haul. They were athletic directors. And Fulmer, you know, how many colleges right now, how many universities have the old ball coach as the AD? It used to be everywhere. I mean, from like the 1990s and all before, that's what it was. know, usually like your football coach retires. All right, now you're the AD, or you're the AD and football coach together. And it has become a job that you really have to be, you have to have your MBA to do this job. So he already was a kind of a fish out of water, even doing that job in the 21st century. I don't think that overall history smiles greatly on, you know, the last two ADs because of some hires they made. They made some good and some bad. You know, Bruce Pearl, Mike Hamilton gets credit for Bruce Pearl, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think of like, what was the best thing? Well, Dave Hart gets credit for Rick Barnes. Right. So, I mean, so you got that, but obviously on the football front, I mean, I guess with Hamilton, you also hired Lane Kiffin, which could have worked out. And then of course you go to the Dooley. I've talked to Hamilton about the whole Dooley search. I tried to get a bunch of names out of him of, you know, he's careful not to give out all the names, but man, that search was a mess. But you know, Tennessee makes a mess of searches. So I don't. It'd be interesting. I don't know. What do you think? Who's if you're ranking ADs? I mean, Doug Dickey is the one who will be remembered and right and celebrated. If you're ranking ADs, I don't know. Where do you rank Hamilton versus Hart?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I'd probably give the slight edge to Hart there, I guess. I think the end of Hamilton's tenure is not remembered very fondly with Tennessee fans. But you're right. Like, if you ask this question 5 years from now, a lot of Tennessee fans aren't going to remember who Mike Hamilton and Dave Hart were. They will always remember who, you know, Philip Fulmer was. And they'll remember John Curry, too, based off nothing more than the disaster of the coaching search in 2017. So, I still think he's a distant fourth on the list that we're talking about here in terms of the legacy of athletic directors and just how poorly that entire coaching search was handled. So I think he's in a different category all to his own, but Philip Fulmer is the one that Tennessee fans are obviously going to remember and talk about from a legacy standpoint. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, Fulmer and Pruitt might have killed the bring back the good old days vibe for the Vols. They're more and more considered just another team. Now people are taking down the memorabilia because there's no light at the end of the tunnel. People want national championships, and the Vols won't ever win one now. I won't root for a dead-end team. It's the same reason I'm not a Grizzlies fan anymore. Fans want their team to have a chance, and the Vols don't have one. They're dead. Downtrodden, Ben, this week, based on the events of the last few days.
Ben, we need to send you a little sunshine, buddy. It's not all that bad. You don't know that they won't win it all again. I'm sure there were Alabama fans in 2007 saying, we will never be great again. What are we ever going to do? You just got to find your Nick Saban. But you know what? Really, Tennessee needs to find. We're talking about, yeah, just go get a Nick Saban. But, you know, we talk about Tennessee, AD legacy. What Tennessee needs is an AD who will have a legacy.
Yeah.
You know, they need to hit a home run with that. They need to have an AD who, you know, is here for 15 years and is really good at his or her job. That's a big, big deal right now. We're all going to focus on the football coach hire, but you've got to get a good AD in there. You know, another thing with Fulmer, by the way, part of his legacy will be Kelly Harper as well. Yep. Let's not forget that. Lady Vols coach. They've got UConn tomorrow, by the way. But that was a hire that, frankly, I didn't love just because I think you got to get outside the let's hire, you know, someone from the Pat Summitt tree. No one will ever, you know, I mean, Pat Summitt's legacy is talk about a legacy. I mean, yeah. That's the greatest legacy to me of Tennessee athletics history, her and General Nealon. But I think that at that job, you go get the best coach available, period, and that's that. And you stop putting pressure on people to try to live up to their former coach. But regardless, it happened, and she's done a decent job so far, and that how she does moving forward is also part of, you know, how we'll remember Fulmer, at least as AD.
Let's revisit our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. How would you classify the current state of the Tennessee Vols head coaching position? And the options are this: top 10 to 15 in the nation, not far off from being elite, an average SEC job, or a straight-up dumpster fire. 271 votes in so far, 55% going with a straight-up dumpster fire, 35% going with average SEC job, 7% going with not that far off from being elite, and only 3% still think it's a top 10 to 15 job in the nation. So, Joe Rexroad, where do you put this job? Like, if you're ranking the Tennessee job right now, how would you go about ranking it, given the history, the resources, but also the recent history of just being a total mess?
I rank it 16th in the country.
Oh, that's nice. Very specific.
Yep. I've gone through, and I'll tell you who I rank ahead of Tennessee. I mean, first of all, in the SEC, I think this is the seventh best job, but it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like you can have a top 12 recruiting class and still be seventh in recruiting, you know, in the SEC. Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida, Texas A&M, and Auburn, I'm putting all those jobs ahead of Tennessee as a job. So, you know, you're right in the middle of the SEC, but I still think you're also one of the seven jobs where you can win a national championship. And then the other jobs that I would definitely put ahead of it, I mean, the easy choices are like Clemson, Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma, Notre Dame. You know, I think you get close here, but I'm going to put Michigan, Penn State, Florida State, and USC ahead of it. And then I've got Tennessee right there. I'm putting Tennessee still ahead of jobs such as Miami, which big difference in terms of access to talent, but also a huge difference in terms of fan base, resources, all that stuff. And ahead of Oregon, too. I mean, the only job I'd put ahead of it is USC. I mean, one huge difference. And I've been to a football game at Oregon, and it's their facilities are amazing. But, like, the fan interest out there, I mean, that's where the SEC and the Big Ten are just so beyond the Pac-12. And that does matter. I mean, look, it matters to have that kind of passion and support, and that's also, you know, financial resources. So even through all this, I think this is definitely easily a top 20 job. Now, the next question I have, Robbie, is why then does a Purdue coach not run here to take this job? Why why are we talking about a Cincinnati coach who it's like, well, you can try hiring him, but he probably won't say yes? Why do I suspect that if the Indiana coach right now were approached, he would probably turn it down? That's the argument for people who say it's not that level of job. But I still believe it is. And it doesn't mean automatically that you can have anybody from any other school ranked below it. But I still believe that overall it is that job. I think there's a lot of hesitation about Tennessee leadership, top down, everyone on the same page, dysfunction. I mean, how could you not look at Tennessee as a coach and worry about all those things?
And that brings up something you said earlier about the poll question and it being so subjective, because I think there are plenty of people and plenty of Tennessee fans out there that still view this job, and they look at the history of it, the resources, how much money you can make as a head coach here. And quite frankly, like, if you are the guy to turn it around, you will be a legend at Tennessee. Like, I'm talking maybe a statue constructed for you outside of Neyland Stadium. There are a lot of things that are still very appealing about the Tennessee job, and I think some people could still make the argument that it is a top 10, top 15 job in the nation. And there are also people that listen to that and wonder if you're on drugs for thinking that way, just based on the way things have gone for that football program over the course of the last 12 years. So it's interesting how polarizing that is. Obviously, in a week like this, given what a disaster it's been, and now Pruitt's out, and you don't know what it's going to look like with NCAA violations coming down the pike here. I mean, it's very hard to look at it right now and justify it still being a top 10 to 15 job. So I get why the poll question results are as lopsided as they are. But I don't think Tennessee is, like, just so far off from being a top-level coaching job again in the SEC. You get the right guy in here to turn things around from a facility, from a resource, all those standpoints. Tennessee, in a lot of ways, I think, is a sleeping giant. The problem is they've been sleeping for the past 20 years.
This is a great opportunity to give you a little preview. I spent most of yesterday on the phone with coaches working on something on how coaches view this job. And actually, it ended up turning a whole bunch of talk about cheating. I got some really interesting intel on how different SEC teams cheat, by the way. But it's a really interesting discussion, and I will say as a little tease. I still think ultimately 99.7% of coaches in this game right now would drop everything they have and come coach Tennessee if they had the chance.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt from Camden texts in and says, I just want Tennessee football to get to the point where they win 8 to 9 games consistently and every few years have that chance to win 10 or 11 games and make the SEC championship. I don't expect them to compete for the playoff every single year. I just want them to have respectable football teams. And I think Matt speaks for a lot of Tennessee fans there. I think a lot of Tennessee fans would take that at this point. Get to a baseline of 8 to 9 wins, and then every few years have a class put together that you can compete with Alabama and the other big boys in the SEC to get to the college football playoff. That does seem like they're very far away from that at the moment.
Just bring in Gus. Gus will do it for you. I'm telling you, Gus will get that done for you.
The
I know
Gus
people
bus,
don't get
baby.
Excited, but my gosh. You know, hit the Gus bus. Kevin Steele, thanks for playing. Thanks for stepping in for a couple weeks. We're bringing in Gus.
Hey, look, I think it's a possibility. I saw the odds the other day released out about who's going to be the next Tennessee head coach. I think Gus was way down the list. He was like, I want to say like plus 1,200 or something like that. I wonder how much of that has to do with Kevin Steele.
Well, a lot, right?
Yeah.
But, hey, I mean, things change in this business. I mean, it's how it goes, man. Kevin Steele get a nice payday for a few weeks of work.
We've seen they change very, very quickly in this business. When we come back, we're going to dive into the Nashville Predators. How do we feel about this team after the first three games of the season? We'll discuss that when we come back. And remember, a little bit of a scheduling change. Matt Duchesne will now join us at 8:45 today here on the program. So looking forward to that conversation as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. for the off-season preview show as Jared Stillman and Teron Davenport break down the upcoming off-season for the Two-Tone Blue. Tomorrow's off-season preview show is brought to you by Corner Pub, Farm Bureau Health Plans, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers, and Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com. So looking forward to that show tomorrow with Jared and TD. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Matt Duchesne, Predator Center, will join us here in about 10 minutes, right around 8:45, and we're looking forward to that conversation with him, getting into the latest with the Nashville Predators, and looking ahead to some more action this week coming up against the Dallas Stars. So a lot to get to with Matt Duchesne. And Joe, it's been three games for the Predators, 2-1 in those three games. Mixed results offensively in terms of their ability to finish. I think the goaltending has been pretty good for the most part. What have been your impressions of the Predators so far, very early into the season through three games?
I like how they're playing overall. I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, sometimes you break it into periods. You know, again, last game was so bang, bang. They made some mistakes, and Carolina will make you pay like few teams can, really. And they did, and the Preds had a lot of chances, and they couldn't bury enough of them. But how many periods out of nine have you felt like they haven't played well? I might just go to the first period of the first game, and I think I've liked their eight periods since then, if you want to look at it that way. And I think, you know, Saros, really good start for him. You know, I thought Pecorine was solid in his one start, so they look fine there. I think a lot of the things we've talked about going into the year, harder to play against, third defense pairing making a difference, top line being dangerous, have all come together. And I like Duchesne's line right now. I really think, you know, he in particular, but that line, it really has looked good. It'll be really interesting to see how that line evolves once Granlund comes back.
Yeah, and that's going to be fascinating to see. We're not too far away from Granlund getting back into the mix here. David Poile was on with Darren Donick and Chase yesterday and talked about Granlund, said Friday's probably not a possibility for Granlund at this point based on the lack of practice and the quarantine that's still taking place. But regardless, you feel like you're not that far away from Mikael Granlund being back into the fold here. So I'm interested to see what they do when that happens, because there have been kind of a revolving door on that fourth line through the first three games. Cole Smith beginning the season there on the fourth line. Matthew Olivier has played the last two games there on the fourth line. Two guys that, quite frankly, as we looked at this team on paper heading into the season, we didn't expect to be a part of things heading into this roster. I'm interested to see what happens when Granlund's back into the fold. Who comes out of the lineup? How do you construct your bottom six after that? Who stays up on that line with Duchesne? You would assume Granlund's with Duchesne. Based on the way he's playing right now, I don't see how you could take Luke Cunningham off of that line either. So some decisions that are going to have to come up for John Hines here in the next few days. But I agree. I like a lot of what I've seen. I still think, you know, offensively, can you finish on some of these chances? That's going to be the big question with this group. I thought they played really well the other night in their loss to Carolina. Quite frankly, of the three games they've played, I like that game the best in terms of their effort and their execution level, just entering the zone. A lot of things to like start to finish in that game. And of course, hockey's weird sometimes. That's the game that you lose. But you did have a lot of chances. Duchesne had a ton of chances. Forsberg had a ton of chances. Johansson had a ton of chances in that game. And you only end up with two goals. So can you bear down and finish on some of these chances when you get them as you move forward here? To me, that's going to be a big question for this group.
Yeah, and certainly. And always, are you manufacturing enough opportunities? I think so far that's been good, but we still got to see that over another week and then a couple weeks. I mean, are they getting enough that Duchesne line? I mean, we're going to be watching that. Obviously, though, I mean, that line has got to provide the support, you know, that the top line needs. And you want to see, like you said, some guys. I mean, Duchesne is someone who right now should have a goal or two. Johansson, you know, Arvidsson got one home. He's had a lot of chances early and just finally, you know, on the power play got one home. But I don't think that this team is going to transform into some offensive juggernaut at any point. So you gotta take advantage of the opportunities when you get them.
It's been very interesting to see how they've handled the defense part of this so far with the pairings, because we talked about it the other day with Chris Mason. Roman Josi not getting a whole lot of time right now on the penalty kill, and obviously that's been something that he's been doing his entire career. And you bring in Matt Benning and Mark Borowiecki, two guys who have a ton of experience on the penalty kill. So I think you feel great about your depth on that side of it with special teams. I'm interested to see, as the season goes along, does Josi get more time on the penalty kill? Is this the way they want to handle it all season long and leave him fresh as they move forward here? That's going to be fascinating. And then, you know, they made a move the other night. Todd Richards behind the bench kind of switched up the D pairings a little bit and put Josi with Fabro and put Ekholm and Ellis back together, who, if you paid attention early in their careers, they were very good together in the times where they were playing together while Shea Weber was still here. And, you know, that was just a limited time that they did that in that game. But just the flexibility of taking a look at different things, I'm going to be fascinated to see how they handle that moving forward. I still would probably leave Josi and Ellis together just based on how dominant they've been at times. But I do think it's been fascinating, the experimentation that's been going on both at 5-on-5 and on the penalty kill on that front.
Well, yeah, and to me, I mean, that's a great luxury. And over time, that's a big deal if you can take penalty kill off Roman's plate or mostly off his plate. I mean, there's got to be a pretty significant cumulative effect there, and especially when you think about a condensed schedule like this. A lot of back-to-backs, and even just the grinding. I just feel like the constant back-to-backs, whether it's back-to-backs or two games in three nights of playing the same team, I just think, it's got to increase the physicality factor a little bit, because you just are just prone to getting sick of the same people over and over, you know? So
yeah.
I think that's a big deal to be able to, and I would think that would be the plan. And so far those guys have looked solid there, and that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And to that point, having more back-to-backs, playing the same team twice in a row, it seems to me, with the way this lineup is constructed, when you've got guys like Richardson and Nick Cousins and even Matthew Olivier who stepped in and it's been a huge presence from a physicality standpoint, I think you're more equipped to handle some of these rough and rowdy games that I agree I think you're going to see this year on that front. So certainly going to be interesting to monitor what the Predators do there. They'll be back on the ice on Friday, so looking forward to that. And a guy who will be on the ice with them coming up on Friday is Pred centerman Matt Duchesne. He will join us when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are excited to go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in Predator Centerman Matt Duchesne, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford, home of the non-commissioned salespeople, and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. Matt, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Hey, good. Yourself?
We are doing very well. Appreciate you taking time to join us today, Matt, and obviously a lot to get to on the ice, but I've got to get your opinion on something to start. What in the world is going on with Philip Forsberg's face with that mustache? Obviously it's working out with him, but what do you think of that glorious mustache that he's growing right now?
Well, he posted a picture of his the first day he had we did photo shoots and stuff. And he posted a picture of himself and his mustache was giving her pretty good. And I said, I wrote on his Instagram, I said, "You must be the Monopoly guy," like the quote from Ace Ventura. So, that's what I think of it.
Well, apparently it's working out for him. Maybe he just needs to keep it rolling the whole time. Matt, you know, obviously from being around you guys in a normal year, you know, the locker room banter and the chemistry and just the relationships you have with each other off the ice is so crucial. And, you know, I'm not around as much this year, obviously, with COVID going on, but I would imagine it's significantly different in the room just with all the protocols and stuff. What's that been like, and how challenging is that to build camaraderie with new guys coming into the team with the situation being what it is?
You know what? Other than, like, spending some time off the ice together, a little bit more than we would have, I guess, like, you know, going to dinners or whatever. Other than that, it's been normal. So I will say this, that part of our team is much better than I think it was in the past. I think we've got a pretty, you know, lively dressing room. Some of the guys we added have a lot of personality in a really good way. And, you know, there's a lot of laughs being had and a lot of, you know, it's been great. The vibe of this team this year is outstanding. And, I think it's translated on the ice. And, you know, for that reason, you know, we deserve to be 3-0. Obviously we didn't finish like we could have the other night, but, I think there's a lot to be really happy about right now.
And, Matt, you take a look at this team, and you mentioned just the start to this season. I thought, honestly, the best game you guys have played so far was the Carolina game. So I know it's a loss, and you want to get all the points you can get, but what do you make of the team so far through three games? How do you like what you've been able to build? Where do you think you guys are?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a great start. I think our offensive game can probably take a little bit of a step still. There's just ozone stuff. Like, I think off the rush, I think we've been really good. But I agree with you. That Carolina game was outstanding. I mean, Carolina every year finishes first in shots for and first in shots against in terms of, like, they allow the least amount of shots against. And it's the same story every single year. And, I mean, I think we only gave them 23 shots when we were in the 30s. I mean, to put it quite honestly, we dominated the game. And they probably had no business winning, but, you know, it happens. That's what's crazy about hockey is, you know, one you know, play here and there, and it can change everything. And one hot goalie, their goalie had a great game for them. And, you know, I know I was definitely disappointed for sure. I'm sure everybody else was the exact same. Then last night's game got postponed because I know we definitely left a couple points out on the ice the night before, and I know we wanted to go back and grab those and, you know, kind of be like, hey, tonight's not going to be a fluke this time. So we'll be hungry for them next time we get them.
Matt, I want to go back to what you mentioned about the feeling in the clubhouse, which I'm sure has nothing to do with media not being in there every day, by the way. I mean, I know you guys have got to be missing us badly. But seriously, who has brought, you know, a fun personality, or, like, how much of that would you attribute to some of the new guys coming in and changing the feel in there?
Yeah, I honestly, pretty much all of them. You know, whether they're bringing something a little different on the ice or and I'm definitely not throwing shade at guys that we had here last year. I mean, I loved our group last year. We had a really good group of guys, but it was a quieter group. I think it was just, you know, guys are more reserved, maybe introverts or whatever. And we brought in guys that are more like, you know, I guess bring that energy outwardly in the room. And I mean, you bring in pretty much almost every guy that we've brought in is you know, a pretty outgoing guy. You know, Boro and I played together in Ottawa, and he's got a great personality. He's really funny. Just a happy dude. Brad Richardson, kind of wily vet. He brings definitely some juice to the room. Nick Cousins, same thing. He's kind of from my neck of the woods, and talks like it too. So we definitely connect there, and it's pretty good. And actually, Richardson and Boro are both Ontario boys too. And then Paula, same thing, outgoing guy. So I just find we have some liveliness in the room, and I think it complements the guys that we have left over from last year. And I just feel like we're playing like it right now. We're playing together. We're playing as a team. When guys, you know, make a mistake or whatever, we're picking them up and saying, hey, no worries. And we're not letting it affect us. Last year, I mean, that second Columbus game was our worst game so far this year. And we probably didn't deserve to win that one. But last year we would have lost it badly because we would have probably we just wouldn't have had the mental toughness to get through. And we were a little bit fragile as a group last year, just with everything going on. And this year we were able to, you know, have a huge third period and pull it out. So sometimes you win games you don't deserve to. And, you know, I still think we played pretty decent that game in some areas. We had some areas we weren't great, but I love the vibe of it. There's no panic in our game and it's fun. It's just a fun atmosphere to be around.
Brett Center, Matt Duchesne on the line with us, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. And Matt, Mikhail Granlund coming back relatively soon. He's over now in the States and going through the quarantine process. And when he's able to play, there's at least a good chance he could be playing with you. How excited are you for him to be back in the fold, and what do you think he brings to the table that complements your game?
Yeah, well, I'll say two things. First of all, obviously we can't wait to get him back. He'll definitely be with me at some point, I think, just for how much we played together last year. But at the same time, I mean, the guys that I'm playing with right now, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. And it doesn't really matter who is in the lineup, out of the lineup or whatever. We have so many talented guys that, you know, I feel lucky to play with any of them. But, yeah, Granny and I play a very similar style in terms of, you know, that give and go, jump into holes, little plays. The down low game. He's a smart player. I mean, he's great defensively. You know, he, you know, definitely is one of the hardest working guys in the team. I love playing with him. And you know, I think last year we probably didn't put up the numbers we deserved to based on how we played and just the different habits and different things we were doing out there. It was just one of those years. So I'm excited to get. When he was coming back, I was like, okay, I felt like he and I had some unfinished business together, and you know, I'm sure he feels the same way a little bit. And if we do end up on the same line together, and I know we will at some point, I don't know if it'll be right off the bat or whatever, but I'm excited. I mean, he's a great player, and I was really pumped. I know we all were really pumped to get him back, and you know, it's hopefully we can have a big year and he can sign a long-term deal here.
Yeah. Were you surprised by that, Matt? Like, did you think of maybe that'll come all the way back around to that at the beginning of the off season, or did that kind of, I mean, I know for us, it kind of came out like, wow, really? What was your perspective on that and it coming back around to him, you know, signing with the Preds?
Well, it's funny when it didn't happen right off the bat, I was kind of like, okay, well, I guess Granny's not coming back. I was pretty bummed about it. And then time went on, I saw he hadn't signed anywhere, and I knew how hard it was for free agents this year, just with, obviously, the whole COVID thing screwing up the cap, and guys, you know, obviously, Granny, the contract he signed, in a normal year, he's getting a lot more money than that, somewhere or here or whatever, you know, he's a heck of a player, but this year, guys that were free agents didn't quite hit it like they wanted to, and as time went on, and I saw he wasn't signed, I'm like, you know what, and I was looking at our team, and I knew we needed to add a couple more pieces still. I just felt like, okay, This could be a possibility. You know, I didn't know anything like on the inside track or anything, but then I started to hear some stuff through a few of the guys in the team and near the end that, you know, a couple of the guys that know him really well from back home and heard it was a possibility. So I was pretty excited to hear that. And it didn't really surprise me at the very end, but at the start, I didn't think he was coming back. So it was a welcome surprise.
Matt, as you look around the league, obviously the time in terms of just purely training camp this year wasn't long to get ready for the season. I know you guys have been skating and you've been on the ice for a long time. What have you thought of the quality of play so far, not only from your team and your own game, but league-wide when you watch the quality of play around the NHL?
It's funny. I've seen a lot of different stuff. I think our games have been really tight-checking, fast, almost playoff-style games. Just like I feel like the teams we've played. I mean, Columbus plays so hard. You know, they don't give you an inch out there. You got to earn everything on D and offensively. And Carolina is a similar team. I felt like we kind of put them on their heels with our team speed. I feel like that's an area that we're different this year. We play a lot faster this year than we did last year, which is great. I love that part of it. So I think our games have been that way. The games I've watched have been kind of a mixed bag. I've seen some games where I was like, geez, that's extremely, you know, it almost looked like they were deflated by no fans or something in the building. It was weird. It was like, there's a few games I've seen that have been a little bit slower and nobody's really hitting anybody. It's kind of bizarre to see, especially right at the start. And then there's been games like ours. I think, like, you know, and I'm sure that's the same way during the season. And maybe the lack of fans kind of makes it, you know, a little louder when the pace of the game is slower. I'm not sure, but you know, I think everybody was ready for the season. I definitely think that. I just think that without exhibition games, sometimes there's different. You know, guys are kind of feeling their way through, you know, the actual game part. Maybe playing a little more conservative and trying to get a feel for playing the game, making the reads. You know, I know. You know, at times. We're all still getting used to that just without having those preseason games. Camp was kind of the same length as normal. It was just we didn't get the preseason games we normally get. So, but, I mean, I know it's amazing that I've been watching hockey more this year than ever. I feel like I was so deprived of it for so long. And the bubble was kind of a weird feel even to watch. So I just feel like this feels normal again, even without the fans, as much as we miss them. But, you know, so I'm sure I speak for everybody and just the grateful hockey's back.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, Matt, is, you know, how different you talked about last week. At least, I mean, you have, you know, your family can be in a box. There's it's at least, you know, your home rink. How different has it been from, you know, bubble life and bubble games?
Yeah, it's night and day. I mean, everything is the exact same other than we're wearing masks and there's no one in the stands. I mean, other than that, it's exactly the same feel. I love our arena. I mean, it just feels like home to me. It's so nice to be there with the guys, and obviously, I have a normal schedule. You know, I've just been so grateful. I think that's like one of my buddies who plays in a country music band here. He asked me. He said, like, you know, how you, 'cause he's been coming to the games. He said, how have you been feeling about, you know, no fans? Like, it feels weird to me, like, whatever. I said, honestly, bud, I said, when you get back, you're going to feel the same. Like, when he gets back to performing in front of live crowds, I just said, you're going to just be so grateful to be back doing what you love. And whether you're playing in front of 400 people or, you know, 40,000 people, I think you're just going to love getting back into it. And I feel like I've just been so grateful to get back into the routine. And I definitely feel like I took some things for granted over the last, you know, 10, 11 years and what I get to do every day. And, you know, you just kind of get wrapped up in the grind of it. So I've just felt great about getting back and just getting to do what I love again.
Pred Center Matt Duchesne has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford, home of non-commissioned salespeople, and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. Matt, really appreciate you taking time to join us. Great start to the season for you guys, and good luck as you hit the road this week.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. We'll talk next week.
Absolutely. See you next week. Matt Duchesne joins us weekly here on Robbie and Rex Road. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what he had to say here and get back into the Tennessee Vols as well. We'll have Adam Vingan from The Athletic joining us at 9:30 to get into the Preds as well. So a lot still to come here on the show. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.